This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Memorial Day weekend is considered by many people to be the unofficial start of summer, and with it comes the beginning of a busy tourism season. But residents in the Cooley region don't have to travel far to find fun and educational destinations this summer. Joining us to talk about museums and tourism centers along the Mississippi River are John Swanson, curator at the Minnesota Marine Art Museum in Winona, Minnesota, Andrew Bruner, assistant marketing manager for the National Mississippi River Museum and Aquarium in Dubuque, Iowa, and Ed Hahn, marketing manager for the National Eagle Center in Wabasha, Minnesota. And I want to start by having each of you kind of introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about, your center and kind of the programs that you offer. So, John, if you want to start by telling us a little bit about the Minnesota Marine Art Museum.
We have been open for 11 years, and our museum is centered on great art inspired by water. We have a very large collection of historic paintings, both American and European, going back to the 17th century up to the present day. And then we have a very dynamic rotating exhibition schedule and educational programming schedule. That means we do 10 to 12 exhibitions per year, either regional artists, national artists, international artists, and also historic exhibitions, either from traveling exhibition services, other museums, places like National Geographic, the Smithsonian Institute, to exhibitions that I curate and put together. So every time you come to the museum, there's something new and different.
And what ages do you guys serve? I mean, is there a kind of a prime age range?
We serve all ages. We have very specific programs for toddlers called Toddler Tuesday once a month for, you know, basically toddlers and their parents, all the way up to a SPARK program, which caters to people with Alzheimer's and related dementia. So we do a lot of school tours for area school children. Oftentimes, this is some of the only arts programming they're going to get in their education in public schools. We're very fortunate to have a grant in place called the Buses on Us, and that allows area school districts, including, you know, here in La Crosse, to be able to contract a bus to bring their kids up to the museum and arrange for a tour, and you just send us an invoice, and we have a fund to pay for that.
And you guys are located in Winona, Minnesota. Can you tell us a little bit about that community and kind of what other, you know, why that location for the museum?
I hear daily people are surprised on the quality and the items that they're seeing in our museum in a smaller town. We're 31,000 people right directly on the river on the Wisconsin-Minnesota border. Well, you can go to any major metropolitan museum and see the type of art that we have on display, but being in a smaller, more connected to a rural area, it's often surprising to people that they can see works by Vincent van Gogh, Pablo Picasso, Camille Pissarro, Claude Monet, and many, many others, both European and American artists. Not only just the great names, but the quality of the works that we have. We have extraordinary examples of some of the best-known artists in art history on display in a smaller community. So it's become like one of the number one destinations in Winona. It attracts people from all 50 states and several countries throughout the year. And it's really been one agent of change in Winona in the last 10, 12 years. We, the museum, along with a lot of the other festivals, Great River Shakespeare Festival, Frozen River Film Festival, Boats and Bluegrass, Midwest Music Festival, and the Minnesota Beethoven Festival, it is changing the perception and the use of Winona from being just an industrial town to being more of a weekend destination for arts and culture and also outdoor activities.
I want to talk more about, you know, how each of your centers are definitely impacting the community, but, you know, we'll go to Ed. You know, tell us a little bit about the National Eagle Center and kind of the programs that you offer there.
We're just a little bit further up the river. We're about 30 miles north of Winona. The National Eagle Center is in Wabasha, Minnesota. We have been in existence since 1999. We had very humble beginnings on Main Street in Wabasha. It was just a little storefront, and we have since grown into a much larger facility that we occupy today. Our current facility was constructed in 2007, so we've been in there 10 years now. and are eyeing further expansion here in the near future. The reason we are in Wabasha, of all places, is that Wabasha occupied a very unique position during the height of bald eagle endangerment, and that was that it was one of the last places in the lower 48 United States that you could reliably see bald eagles during the wintertime. It is still a place during the winter months that a lot of migratory bald eagles will congregate at along the Mississippi. Because of Lake Pepin, which is just a few miles north of Wabasha, which is a widening of the river, it narrows back down into the main channel, and so you have a increased current, which keeps the river open year-round. And so bald eagles, being what we call water eagles or part of the sea eagle family, rely heavily on fish. And so with that water staying open, they naturally come to that part of the Mississippi River Valley. So that's why we are where we are. And, you know, other than that, it's just a beautiful location that we enjoy here in the upper Midwest along the Mississippi. And our two other guests can certainly attest to that as well. And much like the Marine Art Museum in Winona, you know, we have a very broad audience base that we serve and market to. We're at the tail end of the school year now, but we've had quite a few school groups coming through our doors on a daily basis. And so we're really starting to get into what will be the height of tourist season, people coming from around the state, from around the upper Midwest. Last year we had people from over 115 countries visit the center. And so it's just an experience that appeals to visitors of all ages, young, old, middle-aged. And, you know, the experience is quite unique. We are home to six rescued bald and golden eagles. When you come into our facility, you can enjoy a very intimate experience with these birds in that you get to walk into the space where they live. There's no physical barrier between you or the birds. There's no glass. There's no mesh. And so you're standing just mere feet away from them while our staff, our naturalists, our volunteers can answer your questions one-on-one about these birds. So,
you're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about summer destinations along the Mississippi River. We're here with Ed Hahn from the National Eagle Center in Wabasha, John Swanson from the Minnesota Marine Art Museum in Winona, and Andrew Bruner from the National Mississippi River Museum and Aquarium in Dubuque. And now heading south on the river, we have the National Mississippi River Museum and Aquarium. Andrew, tell us a little bit about your center.
The National Mississippi River Museum and Aquarium is located about 2 hours and 20 minutes south of here in Dubuque, Iowa. And for those of your listeners who might not be as familiar with Dubuque, it's known as the Key City of Iowa, and really it is Iowa's oldest city. So it's kind of where the history of that area began. And as such, it's really where our facility kind of has its roots in that founding, with Julian Dubuque being the founder of Dubuque, essentially, when he started mining in the area in the late 1700s. Richard Herman moved to the town in the 1870s, and shortly after that began collecting artifacts about the history of the town and the area, and who's very much interested in Julian Dubuque and his founding of the area. So as he started collecting those artifacts and the tidbits about history in the area, those collections really were the first beginnings of what our collection is at the National Mississippi River Museum and Aquarium. He housed those exhibits in his home, but later on he would donate them. Upon his death, his family donated those to the Dubuque County Historical Society, which is the property, the National Mississippi River Museum and Aquarium is a property of the Dubuque County Historical Society. So those items, such as the cradle from Julian Dubuque that he was resided in as a baby, and we actually have a nail from the coffin of Julian Dubuque that was found, started our collection here. In the 1980s, we kind of began as the Mississippi River Museum. It was kind of a humble one building in the port of Dubuque, Iowa. And from then, we've had a massive expansion over the last 13 years, a $54 million expansion on the Port of Dubuque. That includes the Mississippi River Center and the National River Center. And those really what we want to do is tell the story of Dubuque and its history, but then expand that to cover the entire Mississippi River and its watershed. And with the National River Center, the history and culture of all of America's rivers, which represent, you know, so much of this area and the entire country as a whole. As we know, you know, over two-thirds of our country basically can drain into the Mississippi River Basin. So really what is the history of the Mississippi River is our history as a country. We're on 185,000 square miles there in the Port of Dubuque on 10 acres. We have over 300 species of animals, from mammals, birds, fish, all kinds of aquatic life. And it really is, as everyone else said, it's a place for everyone. We have programs for toddlers. We have school groups in on a daily basis from all over. But we also have things for younger people and families as well, and older, something that the older people enjoy as well. So there really is something for everyone. As far as why Dubuque is such a good location for a museum like this, is kind of what I talked about. It's Iowa's oldest city, so it really is the perfect place to kind of talk about how the culture of the Mississippi River began and how it flowed south and expanded. So Dubuque really is the key city for Iowa, and it's the key city for that information.
And Andrew, what do you think is unique about, you know, the National Mississippi River Museum and Aquarium?
I guess that it has a little bit of everything. And, you know, people sometimes, everyone seems to come with an idea. Oh, I want to see the river otters that you have. I want to see the bald eagles that you have. I really want to see more information on Julian Dubuque. But what they really find is that there's so much. There's really a plethora of information that they can learn on our facility. We have the William M. Black that people can tour. It's a 1930s steam-powered dredge boat, one of the last steam-powered dredge boats made to dredge the Mississippi River. People can tour that on our facility. We have a 1800s log cabin that people can tour on our site. There's, you can see species of animals, like I mentioned, the river otters, the red-tailed hawk, the bald eagles. We have a stingray touch tank that we added last year. We really do have something for everybody, and I think that's what makes our facility unique, especially in an area like Dubuque. You have to go quite a ways to find something that we like what we offer, and it's really a gem to have in this region for people can go to and learn so much information.
And Ed, I would pose the same question to you. What do you think is, you know, unique about the National Eagle Center?
Well, like I said before, I think probably the biggest unique factor of the center is the fact that you can get so close to bald eagles. You know, I see it every day with visitors who come in. They walk into the space where the eagles live, and you just watch their faces light up. I mean, bald eagles, obviously, they're the symbol of our nation. So there's a rich tradition of bald eagles in our culture and our art. But I think most people are used to seeing them at a distance. I mean, we'll see them in the sky. You'll see them sitting in trees if you're driving along the highway. But to be literally, you know, 4 or 5 feet away from them is just awe-inspiring for a lot of people. And the other thing, too, is that just like Andrew said, you know, people kind of come with their own ideas of what they might expect or what they're expecting to see. But a lot of times people will show up and they'll encounter something that they didn't expect. Or I see this a lot of times where people will walk in and, you know, the birds might be sitting still sometimes if they're just kind of kicked back and relaxed, and all of a sudden they'll move their head and people kind of jump. Oh my gosh, those aren't stuffed, those are real. And yeah, they're real, they're very real. And so I think it's just there's a universal appeal for bald eagles, golden eagles, birds in general. They're charismatic megafauna, so to speak. Yeah, it appeals across all the spectrums, you know, whether they're children, whether they're, you know, senior citizens, whether they're people who are from around the world. There's just something about them that people really relate to, they connect with. And so to be that close is just, it's a very powerful experience for a lot of people. And then, you know, at the same time, to be able to look out the window a few feet away and see wild eagles soaring over the Mississippi, it's, you know, It's quite an experience. So,
what kind of, safety measures are put in place? I'm sure, you know, being that close to an animal can, I'm sure there's a lot of planning that goes behind that.
Yeah, so, you know, the staff that work with the eagles, they all wear gloves on their arms when they work with the birds, and the birds go through pretty extensive training. Once they come to the National Eagle Center, they're going to be permanent residents. They're all permanently injured in some way. They've been rescued from the wild. They've gone through an extensive rehabilitation process. But at this point, by the time they're on display, they have been around, you know, their trainer, their handlers for, at the very minimum, a year. And so they're pretty comfortable around people. They're comfortable working with the handlers, but they don't roam free in the center. They are tethered down. They're able to move around their perch space. They're able to get in and out of their water basins, but they can't physically interact with each other, and they can't physically interact with the guests.
And John, you know, we're talking about kind of what is unique about each of these centers, and I wonder if you could share kind of what's unique about your museum.
Well, again, it's the strength of the collections and also the rotating roster of exhibitions. We hear it every single day. People can't believe what they're seeing at this museum. You know, a common question, are these paintings real? Much like the eagles, that, you know, people are really moved and touched that they can see works by Claude Monet and Vincent van Gogh, Picasso, and others. For a city our size to have a collection this strong, you know, these are items you would normally have to go to major metropolitan museums to see, and, you know, and I will say on record, we have some works that are, you know, much nicer than some examples they have in Chicago and L.A. and New York. We have some of the absolute best works by some of these artists on display in, you know, a smaller river town here in Minnesota.
Yeah, and as the curator, I mean, what kind of, planning and connections go into curating such a, you know, an amazing collection?
Well, we really look at great art inspired by water, and we explore the ongoing human relationship with people and water. So when you say the name, you know, Minnesota Marine Art Museum, some people may project a certain idea. They may think, oh, it's portraits of ships or seascapes. Actually, it gives me quite a bit of latitude. If there's a connection to water, I can develop exhibitions that will really kind of fit our programming. For example, most recently, earlier this year and last year, we had an exhibition on sailors' tattoos, looking at the iconography and the development of tattoos in North America. And what it really told people and educated people is if you have a tattoo today, you really should think a sailor. You know, the North American tradition, at least the Western tradition, not the American Indian tradition of skin art, came from Europe via sailors. Very successful exhibition for us. And, you know, it's something you wouldn't expect at, you know, kind of in a traditional stodgy encyclopedic museum. You know, we're not out to do that. So we have something for everyone. You know, someone's looking for very traditional, you know, big name art to stuff that's a lot more educational, more accessible and fun for people to visit.
That's John Swanson from the Minnesota Marine Art Museum in Winona here with us today to talk about fun and educational day trips in the La Crosse area. Also joining us is Ed Hahn from the National Eagle Center in Wabasha and Andrew Bruner from the National Mississippi River Museum and Aquarium in Dubuque. You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. And John, you were talking about how, you know, your museum really focuses on art that, you know, is inspired by water, has this kind of connection between humans and water. And, you know, I wonder how you maybe see that kind of connection between, you know, communities like Winona and the Mississippi River. And if you kind of see that inspiration, that kind of cultural tie echoed in communities in our area.
We do, and I often say this to groups that I'm touring or when I'm talking to students, but you know, every great city in history and just about every great city in North America has one thing in common, and that's access to water. It was good harborage. It was good. Today we think of rivers and waterways as kind of a barrier, but you know, prior to automobiles, waterways were the highway. This is how you move people and goods. You had a defensible city because you had a good harbor. There were a lot of advantages to being on a port. Winona was founded simply because a steamboat could moor right up on a deeper area along the riverbanks. They literally dropped a plank and said, this will do. And that's how the town was founded. So, you know, Winona is still very active with the river for both outdoor recreation, fishing and houseboat culture, but also with industry. We're the third busiest working port in Minnesota. And, you know, there's barge traffic 24 hours a day once the ice is gone. But we're also home to part of the National Flyover as a national bird sanctuary, so you get a lot of, you know, access to seeing pelicans and herons and bald eagles, tundra swans, and all the migratory birds that go up and down the Mississippi basin. But, you know, we're right on the river, so we include that often in the exhibitions that we have on display. And I have an ongoing exhibition. It's a Mississippi River exhibition, and that really is looking at different artists' reaction to the Mississippi from north to south. Currently, for example, I have two St. Louis artists. One's a photographer, Joshua Rowan, and a sculptor named Libby Reuter. And they're looking at the Mississippi watershed and issues of ecology and treating our water, you know, with respect. And then in part of the Mississippi River series, I have an exhibition by a photographer named Nathan Benn, former National Geographic photographer and also from Magnum Photos. And this is called Codicum Memory, Both Sides of the Mighty Mississippi. And the show has done very, very well for us. We've had a lot of great reactions because the show really isn't just about the river, the physical river itself, but it's more, it's social anthropology. It's looking at the people that live on the river, both north and south. It looks at issues of class and race and north-south divide, history. Most of these photos were shot in the early 1970s into the early 1980s, and there are some challenging images in the show. There's some beautiful images in the show. And moreover, we've gotten some amazing reactions. We solicited responses from our visitors to give us direct feedback on what they're seeing and what they liked, what they didn't like. Because, you know, again, there's some challenging issues, you know, images of KKK members, for example, you know, the ugly side of life, but also the beautiful side of life. So the show has done really well for us. I'm really, really pleasantly surprised on the outpouring of feedback we're getting on that. But that's looking at the culture, the life, the people that really kind of choose to live next to the banks of the Mississippi.
Andrew, and I think, you know, your center, the National Mississippi River Museum and Aquarium, also kind of, you know, looks at that connection between the river and, you know, communities and kind of people as a cultural tie. And I wonder kind of how you see that playing out.
Absolutely. I mean, so many people, when they came to this country, kind of traveled until they hit a river and then set up shop there. So as I mentioned before, the story of our rivers is the story of America, and that's really what our facility, what the National Mississippi River Museum and Aquarium tries to tell, is the story of those people that migrated to this area, settled along the Mississippi and all of America's rivers, because it really did, it shaped the culture because it had to. It had everything to do with their survival, their travel, how in every aspect of their life. So, of course, it had a huge it was a huge part of developing the culture that we have in this area. And that's important for us as we're for our facility and in the messages we tried to get to our visitors. We have everything we discussed the native tribes that inhabited this area before European settlement, the earliest settlers that did come to this area, whether it's Julian Dubuque in Dubuque itself or throughout America's rivers. And then, the culture as it continues to adapt today and change today. So, you know, it's very important for us, and I think for everyone here, to tell that story and share how our culture along the river became and how it's evolving to this day.
Andrew Bruner from the National Mississippi River Museum and Aquarium in Dubuque is here with us today to talk about summer destinations in the Coulee region. He's joined by John Swanson from the Minnesota Marine Art Museum in Winona and Ed Hahn from the National Eagle Center in Wabasha. Coming up, we'll continue our conversation on fun and educational centers celebrating the Mississippi River. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. To hear audio archives of today's show, visit visit our website, wpr.org/newsmakers. Our site also has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio and La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about summer tourism in the La Crosse area. The Mississippi River is an iconic part of the landscape in this region, and there are plenty of tourism centers and museums that celebrate the river and the wildlife that depend on it. Joining us to talk about fun and educational tourism centers along the Mississippi are John Swanson, curator at the Minnesota Marine Art Museum in Winona, Minnesota, Andrew Bruner, assistant marketing manager for the National Mississippi River Museum and Aquarium in Dubuque, Iowa, and Ed Hahn, marketing manager for the National Eagle Center in Wabasha, Minnesota. And so, Ed, what kind of special programs do you guys have going on this summer? Anything special that you guys are doing?
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said earlier, we're kind of coming into the height of the tourist season now once schools are out and you know, families are on their summer vacations. So one thing that we do during the summer months is we have a program called Fishing for Eagles, which we will host on Wednesday and Thursdays, starting June 14th, going through Labor Day. And what that is essentially if a family shows up and they have children who are, you know, 15 years or younger, they don't need a fishing license in the state of Minnesota. So with paid admission, they can actually make use of our fishing equipment that we provide, the poles, the life jackets, the lures, and then there's a city dock right outside our facility right on the river. And they can go out there and they can, they can fish. They can obviously learn about the fish that they catch. If those fish are of legal size, they can donate it to help feed our eagles at the center. So it's a very experiential learning opportunity for kids. And so throughout the summer, we'll see a lot of grandparents who, you know, may come multiple times during the summer, but they've got the kids for the day or whatever, and they'll bring them down. So it's a really fun time. It's a great way to teach the kids about good environmental stewardship. A big component behind that program is that we teach about getting lead out of the environment. So, lead is obviously toxic to humans, but it's certainly toxic to eagles. Because they can digest it and absorb that lead right into their bloodstream. So if you have a fish that has your lure and your line snaps and that fish swims off with that lead tackle, that's a potential threat to an eagle. So we use that as an opportunity to educate people about the dangers of lead to wildlife like bald eagles. But it's a great way for them to get out and experience the outdoors. You know, there might be kids coming in from, you know, a bigger city or something, and maybe they've never fished in their life. And so what better way to learn about the environment, experience the environment, than to actually have a hands-on activity like fishing. The other thing that is quite popular at our facility is our daily live eagle programs, which we offer three times a day. And essentially what that is we have a classroom in our facility, and guests can go in there, and the program typically runs 45 minutes to an hour, just kind of depending on the kind of questions being asked. But it covers a broad range of topics. It'll talk about the history of bald eagle endangerment and their subsequent recovery. It'll talk about their biology, their behavior, their habitat. It will certainly touch on other wildlife that live in that same environment. People can learn about other types of raptors, not just eagles, in that program. And then the highlight for people is that at the tail end of that program, we will bring in one of our eagle ambassadors and feed them their lunch right there in front of the audience. Which, you know, for the squeamish, it might be a little bit, not what they were anticipating. But for most people, it's just fascinating for them to watch, you know, a live bald eagle, again, mere feet away, you know, eating that fish or eating that pork or rat or whatever it is that they're eating. And then during that, they also have that chance to just do open Q&A with the presenter. So it's a very popular attraction at our facility. People know about it. People rave about it when they come out. It's very interactive. You know, we definitely get the kids involved. If there's kids in the audience, we'll get them to come up and do some hands-on learning type things, like what's the weight of an eagle? Well, we have a thing where we have bags of sand that have different weights that represent, you know, might be 50 hummingbirds. This one might be 2 crows or whatever, and you drop it into this box, and the kid's sitting there holding it, and you get them all in there, and you say, okay, well, how much do you think an eagle weighs? And then we tell them, but again, it's making it really impactful in that they're engaged, they're interacting with the presenter, and they're really learning about probably one of the biggest, or if not the biggest, success story of environmental conservation in this country. The fact that in 2017, we are celebrating the 10th anniversary of the bald eagle coming off the endangered species list. So, again, you know, it's the thing that's so interesting about the experience for visitors is that a lot of the older generation that come in, especially who lived in this area, will always remark, you know, we never saw bald eagles when I was growing up. And that was true. You know, at the height of their endangerment from 1968 to 1972, along the stretch of what is now the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Refuge, it starts just outside our facility in Wabasha, and it runs 261 miles south to Rock Island, Illinois. And in that period of time, there was only one pair of nesting bald eagles left along the Mississippi. So we've gone from that period of time and that extreme threat of extinction to where we are today, where they're no longer endangered. And, you know, these people who can remember that time can share it with their children and their grandchildren and see them flying outside and see them 5 feet away. So,
yeah, I mean, you've mentioned several different kind of issues that kind of your center is able to bring awareness to when it comes to eagles. And, you know, I wonder if you could talk a little bit more about, why seeing that in person maybe drives home that point more than just information.
Yeah, it's a great question. The center point of our mission as a nonprofit educational facility is environmental education and especially the stewardship, which in these times is extremely important, you know, as we deal with different environmental challenges, climate challenges, things like that. And so in presenting an experience to visitors of all ages where it's engaging, we have 2 floors of interactive exhibits, it's not just static, you gain a deeper appreciation, I think, for a lot of people. It makes the issues, the subject matter, more real. You know, you're not just looking at a picture. You're not just, you know, watching a TV show. You know, you're touching something. You're experiencing it. It's a more intimate experience. But I think it just makes it more real for a lot of people to be that close to a success story like the bald eagle and something that, you know, I'm sure a lot of people may have only heard about, you know, people from overseas. This past weekend, I was in a program that had some folks from Australia and another couple from Germany. You know, why did they come? Well, they obviously know about the bald eagle. They want to see these creatures, these animals, and they want to learn about them. So it's just an experience that I think is, in many ways, extremely unique, and it's extremely meaningful because I see it every day. People have an extremely strong connection to bald eagles.
And Andrew, I wonder if, your center, then the National Mississippi River Museum and Aquarium, if you also see those, the ability of the center to kind of raise awareness about issues regarding the Mississippi River.
Absolutely. We've seen that our facility really does hit home. And kind of talking about that, everyone outside of the United States, they don't always know much about the Midwest, but they know what the Mississippi River is. When I try to tell, when I've met international people and they say, well, where are you from? If I say where I currently live, Platteville, Wisconsin, they're not going to know where that is. Or even Dubuque, Iowa, I don't know where that is. But if you say it's on the Mississippi River, everyone can connect with that and know what that is. So really, that gives our center a unique opportunity to talk about this area and the issues that affect our wildlife in this area and throughout the country. One of our conservation efforts at the National Mississippi River Museum and Aquarium involves a species called the Wyoming toad. And there are species of toad that inhabited just one county of Wyoming, and were down to a handful of specimens during their most endangered time. But centers like ours have really taken it upon ourselves to increase efforts to save species like this. And through our efforts and efforts of facilities like ours, we've actually released over 10,000 Wyoming toad species back into the wild. And we have some of those species on display in our exhibit. The ones that are obviously beyond breeding, you have to be very careful with the breeding specimens. But so I think conservation efforts like that are very important to highlight as we go along. You know, the more and more human involvement, humans are occupying more and more space on this planet. We're going to have to be more cognizant of the space and how we can still inhabit this world together. You know, doesn't have to be an adversarial relationship. So really finding ways that we can conserve our wildlife and conserve our habitats, it's very important to highlight those things.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about summer destinations along the Mississippi River. We're here with Andrew Bruner from the National Mississippi River Museum and Aquarium in Dubuque, Ed Hahn from the National Eagle Center in Wabasha, and John Swanson from the Minnesota Marine Art Museum in Winona. And we're talking about, you know, the way these centers and museums can raise awareness about related issues. And John, I wonder how, you know, if you see the Minnesota Marine Art Museum as a way to maybe promote arts education. You talked a lot about bringing in school-age, you know, groups. And I wonder if that's an issue you guys are, you know, working to address.
Absolutely. It's a very important component to our programming. It's not just exhibitions, but it's educational programming. As I mentioned earlier, from toddlers up to seniors, we offer different events. And I encourage your listeners to look at our website, mmam.org, and or our Facebook page to see the current listings. But in general, every month we offer an adult lecture. That could be one of the artists, like a walk and talk in one of the galleries, or it could be a formal lecture by an art historian or someone else connected to something in the collections. It's important for us to partner with both the universities and the public schools in our area, and we're really fortunate, again, to have the Buses on Us Fund so we can bring students in. And we hear this time and again. This is sometimes, for some of these outer-lying, smaller school districts, this may be the only arts programming that children are going to get this year. No art class, no art history survey, no, you know, anything. So, you know, in the digital age, we have so much information bombarding us every single day that it's become static. To take a breath and actually stand in the footsteps and look at an actual oil painting by one of these important artists, it's an opportunity for students to make a connection. A lot of times I'll see students coming in and, you know, they may not want to be there, and they walk out like really excited about a particular piece they saw, or like, oh, I had no idea, or that was so cool, or this. So, you know, it's important to not just look at a screen on a book on television, but to actually come in and see the objects in person.
I want to return to an idea that you mentioned earlier, John, that, you know, your art museum is an agent of change in your community, and the way it's kind of, you know, shaping, I guess, the what Winona is known for. And I wonder if you could tell us more about that.
Well, sure. Yeah, again, traditionally, Winona was known primarily as an industrial town, but now there's a lot of different organizations, arts and cultural organizations, that have come in from various sources doing a lot of really great things. So some of it's grassroots, some of it's from outside the community, but for me, it's a perfect-sized community to be able to get things done. If I want to partner with the Great River Shakespeare Festival, you know, in a matter of emails and a phone call, we can get together and sit down and hash out some ideas and actually follow through with it very quickly. I was talking to Ed. We're going to partner with the Eagle Center sometime in the near future on an exhibition to be announced. Winona's not so large that you can't get things done, and it's small enough that, you know, we can get everybody from all these different arts and cultural organizations together very easily and very simply for a meeting and come up with a way to kind of, you know, promote Winona as a destination and also each of our individual programs and festivals.
And Ed, I wonder if you see the National Eagle Center as also kind of an agent of change in Wabasha.
Yeah, absolutely. It, you know, we are an attraction that brings people, like I said, from around the world, certainly around the state and around the region. But I think one of the big strengths we have, and I think there's a lot of examples, I mean, there's two other examples with us here today of just what there is to do along the Mississippi in the upper Midwest. You know, you don't have to go very far, and you're in the big city of, you know, Minneapolis or St. Paul or even a growing city like Rochester. And, you know, it's a short drive away to go to a really peaceful, beautiful, nature-oriented destination. And so I think what we are able to offer is, you know, a really amazing experience. You get to learn up close about some of the most majestic animals and creatures that we have in our country that live right here. And you're right there on the Mississippi. Like Andrew said, people from all over the world know about it. They come to see it. You know, we at the National Eagle Center are gearing up to do an expansion here in the next few years. And so it certainly is an agent of change for the community of Wabasha, but it's a positive change in the sense that, you know, we're going to be bringing in how many thousands of visitors. You know, those people are going to go to the shops that are in Wabasha. They're going to go to the wide range of restaurants that we enjoy in Wabasha. And so, you know, it's not just that we are going to benefit. It's that the whole community that is Wabasha, Kellogg, and really all the communities in the area that offer attractions, whether it's, you know, something like an ecotourism thing on the river, whether it's a vineyard, whether it's a state park. But the fact that places like the National Eagle Center or the Mississippi Museum and Aquarium or the Marine Art Museum are bringing people from around the world to this part of the United States, Minnesota, Iowa, it's huge. The potential is huge, but the impact is very, very real.
And Andrew, you know, how are you seeing the, you know, the National Mississippi River Museum and Aquarium being an agent of change in Dubuque? Are you, and can you tell us a little bit about maybe the economic impact also?
Yeah, we've had the prosperity of our facility and how we've grown over the last 10 years has had a huge financial impact on the community of Dubuque. It's part of a greater effort to revitalize Dubuque over the last 10 years, especially the Port of Dubuque region, which we're in. So we have, on average, about 220,000 people that come through our facility every year, which equates to over $100 million in economic impact to our region, which is huge for a city the size of Dubuque that's trying to thrive in this modern society. You know, we're not the huge city like a Chicago or a Milwaukee, but we're not a small city, so we're kind of in that in-between area. So it's very important for facilities like this to help revitalize our community. So we've seen a huge financial impact from what our facility has been able to do for Dubuque and help it grow and really prosper.
That's Andrew Bruner from the National Mississippi River Museum and Aquarium in Dubuque here with us today to talk about fun and educational day trips in the La Crosse area. Also joining us is Ed Hahn from the National Eagle Center in Wabasha and John Swanson from the Minnesota Marine Art Museum in Winona. You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. And earlier we heard from Ed about kind of what the National Eagle Center has planned for this summer. But Andrew, can you tell us a little bit about any special programs you guys have coming up on the calendar?
Absolutely. So every summer we have a kind of a premier summer exhibit that we feature at the National Mississippi River Museum and Aquarium. The last few years we had a Titanic exhibit, and then we had a dinosaurs exhibit last year. And this year's summer exhibit is entitled Monster Fish in Search of the Last River Giants. And that's a National Geographic exhibition. A fun one to say, but it's been a great start to the season for us. That runs at our facility until October. And if anyone's seen the Monster Fish series on National Geographic Wild, it kind of follows the adventures of Dr. Zeb Hogan, who's a National Geographic explorer and freshwater ecologist who travels really around the world in search of these mega fish, anything that grow up to be 6 feet long and over 200 pounds. And a lot of people don't know that fish that size are in the Mississippi River, but they do exist. And that's so we talk about how these mega fish exist and where they are. But we also talk about the conservation the conservation angle of why these fish aren't growing to be that size anymore, and why is that happening? And what we found is because of human impact and encroaching on habitat and pollution and things of that nature, these fish simply aren't living as long as they used to in the past. So they're not growing to be that massive size. So it's a really cool exhibit, both for kids to come in and just be fascinated by the sheer size of these fish, but also to learn a little bit about conservation and what we can do to preserve these habitats for these species of freshwater fish and keep them around for a long time.
And John, what's on the summer calendar for the Minnesota Marine Art Museum?
Well, I have a couple exhibition changes coming up. We have a very special two-gallery show opening in June. It opens June 23rd. And this is 120 works, painting, prints, sculptures, photographs, by a group of artists known as the American Society of Marine Artists. This is their national exhibition, which is done every 4 years. I've hosted it before, and I'm very proud to host it again. And these are the best contemporary working artists, marine artists in North America today, in a juried show picking out their best works. So there's something for everyone in there, a variety of different subjects, historic to contemporary, watercolor to oil, sculpture to photograph. Some of the best working today will be in this show. And also in June, we have a free family event called Family Fest. It's an annual event that we do at the museum, which offers art tours and art projects, programming, and even fishing with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife right on the Mississippi River at the museum. And it's a very popular event. We have many, many people come out every year for this. We've been blessed with great weather for every single one of these, so I'm crossing our fingers again. And that's going to be on Saturday, June 24th, running from 10:30 a.m. to 1 p.m., a free event for the families. You can find more details on that on our website, mmam.org.
And John, earlier you mentioned kind of, the nice thing about the museum is that people can come and see these works of art and maybe get away from the static of everyday life. And I wonder, how the museum is approaching staying relevant as it looks to the future.
Well, again, with a very dynamic, changing exhibition roster and a lot of great arts education programming, there's something new every time you come back to the museum. It's very important to not just simply be an encyclopedic library of art and stay static and not change. So I use the analogy, you go to the same movie theater every time, but you see a different film. You can go to the same museum, but see a different exhibition every time you come in. So we aggressively rotate a lot of new content through the museum so people can come back or encourages membership.
And Ed, I pose the same question to you. How is the National Eagle Center working to stay relevant?
Well, as I said, we are planning an expansion to our facility here in the next 4 or 5 years. And what that will allow us to do is have a lot more exhibition space for different exhibits. What we really pride ourselves on as far as our exhibit space is that it's very hands-on learning. Kids can go up, they can see how strong they are versus, say, an eagle's grip with its talons, or you can kind of do a simulation of what an eagle sees with its eagle vision. So we're going to have a lot more space for that in the future. We'll obviously have more room for housing more eagles, and that's critical to our overall mission because outreach is a big part of what we want to do at the National Eagle Center. In the past and currently, our eagles will go to the VA hospitals and visit wounded vets. They'll go out to schools. They may go to civic festivals, things of that nature. And so the expansion will certainly allow us to do even more engagement out in the community, in the state, in the region. And then another component of that will be a private collection that has been gifted to the National Eagle Center by a man named Preston Cook. And so he has an expansive collection of eagle art, eagle artifacts of historical, cultural significance. And so we'll be able to do exhibitions on varying themes that will really tie together the biological and environmental education that we've done with more of a cultural aspect to it as well. So,
we've been talking with Ed Hahn, Marketing Manager for the National Eagle Center in Wabasha, Minnesota, John Swanson, Curator at the Minnesota Marine Art Museum in Winona, Minnesota, and Andrew Bruner, Assistant Marketing Manager for the National Mississippi River Museum and Aquarium in Dubuque, Iowa, about summer destinations along the Mississippi River. And that's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. The executive producer for Newsmakers is John Gatto, and our senior news editor and producer is John Davis. If you missed part of today's show, you can find the audio archives at wpr.org/newsmakers.